How are you?
Nick DiGiulio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate studio, the seventh floor of the Trib Tower. We're here till 5 a.m. as we are every weekday morning. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text, 312-981-7200. And also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. But the best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Nick D Show. And when you go to our Facebook page, you will find all the information for my next guest right there and ready to go. Her name is Patty Farmer, and she is the author of a new book called Playboy Laughs, The Comedy, Comedians, and Cartoons of Playboy. She has a website, patty-farmer.com, for more information, but we have it linked up on said Facebook page. And the last time Patty was with us, she had written a book called Playboy Swings, How Hugh Hefner and Playboy Changed the Face of Music, which was a terrific book. And her latest, Playboy Laughs, is also a terrific book, and we want to welcome Patty back to the show. Patty, welcome back.
Good morning, Nick. How are you?
All right. How are you?
I'm doing great. Boy, I have to tell you, you and your listeners are early birds.
Yeah, we like to be up late and up early.
Sounds like the folks at Playboy.
Yeah. Well, there you go. It's appropriate then. I have to tell you, I really enjoyed the new book, Patty. It's sort of right up my alley. I happen to really. Love the history of comedy, and you did a magnificent job writing about that time, bringing those periods back to life, and also, focusing on Playboy, which maybe people don't realize the impact that Playboy and the television shows and the magazines and stuff had on culture.
Thanks, Nick, for the nice words, and I think you're absolutely right. You know, cartoons and comedy and entertainment is not the first thing that people think of when they hear Playboy.
Yeah.
You know, of course, they immediately think bunnies and centerfolds. But, you know, Hess loved comedy. He wanted to be a cartoonist before he ever thought about putting out a men's magazine.
Yeah. Well, talk a little bit about that. You talk about it in the book, because he doodled even as a young kid, and he continued to draw, and he had those aspirations. Talk a little bit about that.
You're right. He wanted to be a cartoonist. You know, that was a big deal in the late 40s, early 50s. You know, there are comic books had come out, and I think it was a response to the Depression, maybe, and people dreamed, and you had these great cartoon heroes, and your alter ego could be there on paper. And yes, Hef wanted to be a cartoonist. He wanted to make his living drawing cartoons. And he applied around, even came out with a full 74-page comic book that was published, and it had quite a name. It was called This Toddlin' Town, Rowdy Burlesque of the Manners and Mores of Chicago. But it was good. I've seen it. I actually own a copy. And it was good. It just wasn't good enough to compete with a lot of the other great cartoonists from that time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe for the better, because he went on to build the Playboy empire.
And as a result of building the Playboy empire, giving a place and a showcase to other great satirists and cartoonists as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, I spoke to hundreds of people writing the book. And so many of them echoed George Burns' sentiments. Of course, I didn't talk to him, but, you know, he's famous for saying there were no more places left to be bad. Mm. And by that, of course, he meant, you know, to perfect their acts and work on stage. And Joan Rivers did expand on that. And when she was starting out as part of a trio, which many people don't know, she started out at Playboy, and they gave her a stage to work on her timing and work in front of an audience and figure out what worked and what didn't work. And not only that, Playboy then provided a circuit where, you know, these comedians and artists could actually work their craft and just go from club to club to club and get a paycheck while they were getting good.
You know, while you mentioned the 72-page book, comic book that Hugh Hefner did, you said you have a copy. Is it available, or is it hard to find?
It's really hard to find.
Yeah.
Really hard to find, yeah.
Okay. Because I would love to see it. I really would, especially since, you know, I'm born and raised here in Chicago. I would love to see what his thoughts were back then, you know, portraying
us. Well, we have to get together. Next time I'm in Chicago, we'll go to dinner and I'll bring my comic book.
That's great. I would love to see that. By the way, before we get back to the book and everything, I want to mention that you were a former model. And so you did some modeling. How did you become an author? How long were you in the modeling business?
I was a full working model for about 3 years, mm-hmm. and it paid the bills. You know, I was going to school, and it just wasn't, you know, challenging enough. And I wasn't, you know, good enough to be a top model. I was good enough to be a working model, but I competed with the likes of, you know, Christie Brinkley and Rene Russo and all those beautiful girls that were around at the same time. Mm-hmm. And actually, my passion is entertainment, writing, and business. So it was good for the time. And then I segued into business and got a college degree in business and put some of my theories to practice. And when the economy tanked in 2005, 6, or 7, I guess it was, I started writing. Because there wasn't much else to do.
Yeah. Well, you're a terrific writer and really a great historian as well. And your books, the two books that I've read, this one and Playboy Swings, are meticulously researched. And you mentioned you talked to hundreds of people for the book. How long did it take you to put this thing together?
It took over 2 years for each of the Playboy books. And thank you for the compliment. I do really a lot of research, and that's 2 years of working on it every day. Mm-hmm. You know, I put together a research team, and we really, really get all the facts and figures and dates, and that's how I start. And then I polish it by going to the artists that were actually there. You know, with this one, comedians like David Brenner and Shecky Green and Lily Tomlin. You know, folks like that. So it's a big project. It's a fun project, but it's a lot of work.
Yeah, no, it feels like, I mean, I could tell you that you put a ton of work into it, and it pays off because it's not only very entertaining read, but it's, like I said, it's researched very well and really informative.
Thank you.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about, let's go back to the cartoons that were in Playboy. Now, it was a part of Playboy since the very first issue in 1953. There were comics and panels and jokes and cartoons throughout the magazine from the very inception. And that was something that Hugh Hefner felt strongly about, correct?
Right. You know, like we were just discussing, you know, he really loved cartoons. That's how he wanted to make a living. And so he incorporated it right from the beginning. But typical of Hugh Hefner and, you know, such a part of his success was in getting the very best to work on any segment of the Empire, whether it was magazine or the music or whatever. And he had people like Jack Cole draw for the magazine, or Shel Silverstein, Leroy Neiman, all these great people were cartoonists that appeared on a regular basis in Playboy. People like Al Pfeiffer and Arnie Roth and the great, I love him and visit him as much as I can, Al Jaffe.
Al Jaffe, I have to tell you, Patty, Al Jaffe is one of my favorite people. I, as a guy in his 50s, I grew up with Mad Magazine. And his contributions to Mad Magazine were hilarious. And one of my favorite things that Al Jaffe ever did was Snappy Answers to Stupid Questions.
Yes.
One of my favorite things ever, formed my sense of comedy at a very young age reading those. And just the fact that he contributes so much to this book and you got to talk to him is amazing.
You know, I still talk to him. You know, the book's coming out next week and, you know, the interviews are over. But anytime I have free time, I go over and see him and his wife, Joyce. And I have to tell you, Nick, at 96, he's still working for Mad Magazine.
Yeah,
he's still doing.
It's amazing.
Golden.
It's amazing. What's he like?
He's hysterical.
Yeah.
He's very, very funny, very dry witted, but kind and funny, and you would never in a million years guess his age. You know, he walks upright, and I usually when I go, I'm either at his apartment, their apartment, or they have the apartment next door also that he's converted into a studio, and the best thing's hanging out there watching him work on a fold-in and talk about the early days of Mad Magazine and the games and, you know, Arnie Roth and, you know, just throw him a topic and he'll tell you these stories from, you know, back in the day that are just, you know, amazing.
Yeah.
He'll, you know, just regale me. I love just sitting at his feet practically, not really, but figuratively.
Right, sure.
And, you know, hearing these stories about an age that we don't have anymore.
It's amazing because over the years I've had Dick DiBartolo on my show many times. Also, mm-hmm. also a great contributor to Mad Magazine and a contributor to, you know, I mean, he created all of the Weird Willy stuff on Match Game. That was all him. And, you know, like you're right, Patty, the stories that these guys have, you just want to sit and listen to them forever.
Yeah. And that was the time when we had cartoonists.
Yeah.
You know, that we had these guys with this warped sense of humor, you know, drawing and writing these funny lines. And, you know, I say that lovingly, warped sense of humor. It's just a different sense of humor that cracks you up, you know,
yeah.
Whether you're on a bus or walking down the street, you just find yourself laughing and people wonder, yeah. You know, what the joke is.
Well, the cartoons and the satirists and the strips that are in Playboy, you know, they're iconic. You can turn the page and you could recognize the art. You could recognize the artist, and they're all top notch. And that's a great part of the book too. Patty, hang on, okay?
Thank you.
Hang on a second. We're going to talk about, we're going to get into the world of stand-up comedians who were featured in the magazine and most importantly at the clubs and on the television shows, really groundbreaking TV shows that Playboy was responsible for. And the list of the comedians that worked on these shows and in the clubs is mind-boggling. And so Playboy Laughs is the name of the book. The comedy, comedians, and cartoons of Playboy. And we have a link on our Facebook page for all the information. We're going to have more with Patty Farmer right after this. Well, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower here till 5 a.m. And my guest right now is Patty Farmer. She's the author of a new book called Playboy Laughs, The Comedy, Comedians, and Cartoons of Playboy, a terrific book that talks about that title, the comedy involved that was in and around the Playboy world, the magazine, the TV shows, the clubs. And we talked about the cartoonists in the last segment a little bit, and now we want to talk about some of the comedians. Patty, welcome back.
Thanks, Nick.
So the list of comedians who worked at the Playboy clubs, who appeared on the TV show and were interviewed in the magazine, is astonishing. Would you not agree?
Oh, absolutely. People ask me all the time. They say, you know, name some comedians who appeared either on the TV shows or in the clubs. And I always say, you know, it's easier to tell you who wasn't there because all the greats from, you know, the late 50s, 60s, 70s, you know, it just spans decades. Were at the Playboy clubs, either getting their starts or starting there, and then they kept coming back because they loved doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talked before about Joan Rivers, and she started at the Playboy Club, and she told me she kept coming back throughout her career. You know, as she got to the next stage and dropped her two sidekicks, she came back as a stand-up, and then she still came back as a headliner.
Yeah.
So people just liked performing there.
And also, one of the other things is that, and we've talked about this, in your last book especially, in Playboy Swings, how revolutionary what Hugh Hefner did in terms of, you know, embracing people who were of a different race at a time when it wasn't really easy to do that. You know, showcasing women comedians at a time when it also wasn't easy for women to get stage time or TV time. And, you know, he broke down a lot of barriers, and we talked about that in your last book, and you talk about it here. He did it for music, and he also did it in comedy.
Absolutely. One of the first comedians he hired was Dick Gregory. And at that time, we were still operating under segregation laws in the U.S., you know, pre-1964. And he hired Dick Gregory and put him in front of a totally white audience. And not intentionally, but they also happened to be a white audience from Alabama. And Dick said it just, you know, opened doors. It broke down barriers for him. Eventually, he got publicity from exclusively working at the Playboy clubs. A Time writer came to the club just because he had heard about this, you know, cool Playboy club. He came on a visit to Chicago with his wife, loved Dick's act, wrote about it. And before you knew it, Dick Parr was calling and asking him to be on a TV show. And when he got his star on the Walk of Fame a couple years ago, one of the first things was that he said was, you know, I credit Hugh Hefner for helping me be here by breaking down the color barriers.
Yeah.
But it wasn't only, you know, Dick Gregory. It was, you know, a lot of people. And, you know, somebody once told me in writing the book, he said, you know, Hef didn't care if you were white, green, or purple, only if you could tell a joke, swing an instrument, or sing a song.
Yeah.
And that was really Hugh Hefner. He was truly, is truly, we still have him with us.
Yes.
Colorblind.
Yeah. And also, you know, at a time when it was very, I don't think people really realize, and you know, and they will when they read this book, the climate, the political climate in terms of comedy back in those days, because political comedy kind of didn't exist, and people certainly
right.
didn't take a stand that was you know, controversial until guys like Lenny Bruce and Mort Saul and Dick Gregory came about, and these are guys that Hugh Hefner completely embraced. Talk a little bit about Hugh Hefner's relationship with Lenny Bruce.
Lenny Bruce, you know, he loved Lenny. And loved his comedy and loved that he had the guts to speak up about many issues. But it was for that exact same reason that I think Hef ended up not being able to have him at the clubs because he was so controversial. You know, I talked to a lot of people regarding Lenny, and there are a lot of good insights in the book, I think.
No, there are. Absolutely. And now let's another one that was very important at that same time period was Mort Saul. And Hugh Hefner's relationship with Mort Saul was a pretty interesting one as well.
Right. And again, you know, that's how much comedy meant to Hef. When he had the Playboy Jazz Festival, he picked a comedian, Mort Saul, as
yep.
the MC.
Yep.
And he could have had anybody MC it, you know, a famous musician or a politician or anybody, and yet he wanted a comedian. And Mort also was very political and very funny and appeared at the clubs. And this was at the pretty much the height of Mort's career. He was very popular. It wasn't starting out that he just threw him a job, but he wanted to play with the Playboy clubs. And I did get to talk to Mort. It was an important part of his life.
Yeah, absolutely. Great stuff, too, in there. I want to preview, before we let you go, Patty, I want to preview your next book. It's called Starring the Plaza, Hollywood, Broadway, and High Society Visit the World's Favorite Hotel. Give us a little preview of that one.
That's almost like the opposite side of the coin from Playboy. It's a photo album about the iconic Plaza Hotel in New York. It's been around for over 100 years, and it is the go-to spot from directors and producers throughout the century
mm-hmm.
to film movies. So movies like North by Northwest and Arthur and Crocodile Dundee and Sabrina and just on and on, you know, so many movies and famous people who stayed there, the Beatles and Marilyn Monroe and Truman Capote. I have all these iconic, fabulous photographs and commentary about it.
I can't wait to get a copy of that. You know, one of my favorite comedies of all time, some of it took place at the Plaza, and it's Barefoot in the Park, which is one of my favorite movies ever. And the whole first 15 or 10 minutes of the movie take place at the Plaza, which is just great.
Yeah. And Robert Redford, you know, at least three movies he filmed there. So very famous hotel, very beautiful hotel, kind of timeless. And I think your listeners would enjoy it.
Okay. Now, when is that going to get released?
That comes out the end of August.
The end of August. Okay.
August 23rd. Yes.
August 23rd. Starring the Plaza, a great picture book about the Plaza Hotel in New York City. Patty, I love your work. I think you're great. And it's always fun to have you on.
Nick, time flies. I can't believe we're done already.
Yeah. The book is great, and I hope everybody goes out and buys it. It's called Playboy Laughs, The Comedy Comedians and Cartoons of Playboy. Your website is patty-farmer.com, and we'll talk to you soon. Patty, thanks again.
Thank you, Nick.
Okay, take care.
Go have another cup of coffee.
Okay, see you later.
Bye.
Patty Farmer, everybody. And the book is called Playboy Laughs, The Comedy Comedians and Cartoons of Playboy. Her last book, by the way, is tremendous. Playboy Swings, How Hugh Hefner and Playboy Changed the Face of Music. And she's a terrific writer, and I can't wait to see the fantastic coffee table book about the Plaza Hotel. She's terrific. And we thank her for stopping by. All right, we'll take a quick break right here on 720 WGN.